Whether this is her first Mother's Day or her 40th, she deserves more. Shop tons of stunning on-trend jewelry for every budget at Diamonds Direct. Diamond fashion jewelry, beautiful birthstones, everyday pearls, starting at just $200. Commemorate the real loves of her life with a gorgeous pendant featuring the birthstone of the one who made her mom. This Mother's Day, Diamonds Direct is everything you need to say thank you. Diamonds Direct, your love, our passion. Online at DiamondsDirect.com.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, the internet, and welcome to this episode of the Weekly Zeitgeist. These are some of our favorite segments from this week, all edited together into one nonstop infotainment laugh extravaganza. So without further ado, here is the Weekly Zeitgeist. So a lot going down at the end of last week in the world of our president, our fearless leader, President Donald Trump. Michael Cohen has flipped, which I thought we already knew that, but he has just been voluntarily just giving it up to Mueller.
Basically giving up all. I mean, well, here's the thing. Everyone was assuming when he took the plea deal that they're like, okay, maybe this means there'll be cooperation, but we didn't know. And yeah, I think the assumption was obviously he wouldn't get a plea deal unless he was cooperating. But yeah, now we find out it's been voluntarily, and he's been talking to Mueller about all kinds of Trump stuff, including financial business dealings with Russia, collusion with Russia, just surrogates and like their participation in influencing the outcome of the election. And also whether or not if Trump offered him or anyone else a pardon. And then another thing, which is juicy, too, is that they're also asking him about like sort of the inner workings of the Trump Foundation and the charity and how they like what kind of shady shit is going on there. And he's got a lot of details. He's got a lot of know-how. So that seems to be something that would worry the president. Another thing that's interesting, though, too, is that, you know, like in the Steele dossier, they talked about how Michael Cohen had gone to Prague to talk with like Russians about how to like hide money to payments to hackers and stuff. And he always denied it. He was like, I was in New York
or
whatever.
I've never been to Prague.
Right.
Look, here's my passport. Just
right.
Shows you the cover of it.
Right.
He's like, see?
And then, so the thing is, like, I know McClatchy or someone was reporting that Mueller did have evidence that Cohen was actually in Prague. And if that is true, and he's talking to Mueller about that too, and there's any even a shred of truth to what the allegations are in the Steele dossier, that would mean that he would probably be a party to conversations about how to make deniable payments to Russian actors for the hacking. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
We'll see. We live in a fantasy world until shit actually happens.
Right. And there's also weird stuff with Dowd. They think that Dowd was offering to pay for Manafort's legal fees as like a way of trying to keep people away from facts.
Yeah, well, right, because they were like they were hard pressed for money. We all know Paul Manafort was broke daddy.
Right.
And Rick Gates also, like, no one in this entire investigation has the fucking wallet for all the legal fees.
Right.
And yeah, John Dowd was sort of being like, hey, can we get some money, man? Can we funnel some money out of
the White House defense fund?
Yeah. Oh, wow. And then he was even like, then when that failed because the ethics people were like, absolutely not. What the fuck? What do you think this is? Then he was like, hey, man, like basically had a hat out and was like, maybe we can put $25,000 together real quick to give to Manafort immediately because apparently they urgently need it. And then when that thing got shut down, Rick Gates pled guilty the next day.
Yeah.
So clearly they knew they cannot afford to have these people give any kind of like information that would begin connecting dots to the point where, yeah, we're even seeing John Dowd going the extra mile and doing a little Kickstarter.
Why wouldn't Trump do it? He's a billionaire. He should just pay his own money. Oh, wait, he's not a billionaire, and he's cheap as fuck. That's
treason,
right.
Is so expensive.
I know.
Like, I thought it would be so much cheaper.
Well, you know. Yeah, he just thought, just very easy, just make some, you know, Venmo payments and put a couple emojis that have nothing to do with hacking, and you're good. You're in the clear.
I'll be interested to see how Trump's base reacts to the revelations around his, like, tax documents, because I do think that he's going to be much less wealthy than they think.
Dude, what would be the amount that would be totally emperor's naked? Like the clothes have been stripped. We see you and your mushroom penis.
I don't know. Like under 100 million, probably.
I like the idea that he's only worth like 3 million.
That would be amazing.
Like it's he's so bad with
his
money.
And I can already see the people making arguments where they go, being a billionaire is not about how much money you have.
Right.
And like saying shit where you're just like, how could
it's like
this?
He lied about even having it. Yeah, but it costs money to have money. You know what?
It's more about like what you're worth.
Right.
Like, they're
just, yeah, and on paper, you ain't worth shit.
They will bend time and space to make it.
Oh, 100%.
Yeah, that's true.
He's a billionaire. He's like a mental billionaire. Mind.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, yeah. Very much like a Power of Now kind of dude. He's like, I know this secret.
Not Tony Robbins said some shit like that. Yeah, man.
So Rosenstein is also back in the news with his weak chin. He might have the weakest chin.
It would be impossible to uppercut him.
Yeah. You would just, your hand would just slide
somehow,
up.
Yeah.
It's like a shark snout. So at the time that we're recording this, the New York Times is reporting that Rosenstein offered to wear a wire to record Trump to help invoke the 25th Amendment. He didn't go through with it, but he was basically hoping to use the evidence to, I think they said, convince Pence and Sessions to invoke the 25th Amendment. Like gather evidence that this dude is just,
they act like they don't work with him every day and wouldn't know that shit anyways. Like, yo, have you heard what he said? It's like, I'm here. Yeah. Like, what do you mean?
But maybe they were just like, nah, he's good. And he was like, what? I just sat in a meeting with him where he, you know, didn't seem to know why we have a defense department.
Yeah, and he used Star Wars toys to explain the Space Force.
Right. But now, so he came out at the end of last week and basically said that, you know, none of this is true. All of my dealings with the president have made it clear that we don't need the 25th Amendment. And then other people said that he only brought that up sarcastically. So we were thinking maybe this is being floated by Trump people in order to give them a justification to fire Rosenstein?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's so many ways to cut this up and look at it. I mean, on one hand, you know that this idea came out of Rod Rosenstein writing that memo that ultimately had Comey fired, and that threw him for a loop. And then he was like, oh, shit, I didn't realize that was going to happen. But then you don't know if he was totally ignorant that that would be the case. But also, you know that as we're talking right now, Michael Cohen has been talking to Robert Mueller. He has a lot of information. It seems like Paul Manafort probably has a lot of information that we're starting to see, like the finisher moves that Trump is trying to use now. And he really needs a pretext to fire Rod Rosenstein if he's going to kneecap Mueller.
Right.
So
I think it's fair to assume that Trump is going to maybe do some crazy shit to try and derail it in some way, because everybody who knows where the bodies are buried are talking to Mueller for immunity or just because. Like
right.
Alan Weisselberg, the guy who's the CFO, who people say is the real, like,
the dude who
payload.
Knows the money dude. Yeah. Yeah, he knows how the money moves.
Right. And has...
Like Cardi B.
He's been the CFO of the Trump organization since the 70s. So it's like, yeah.
I mean, there's another theory. Super producer Nick Stumpf might be positing that maybe this is someone in DOJ trying to provoke a rash response from Trump to create a constitutional crisis, and then it would be clearer to get rid of Trump. I don't know. There's so many ways to look at it, because even when you look at the "We Are the White House Resistance" anonymous op-ed,
right,
that could have been seen as, I'd believe that there are people doing whatever they can to try and keep him from, you know, indulging his worst instincts. But you could also see that as, you know, furthering the narrative that there is this deep state conspiracy against Trump. And this Rosenstein thing could also serve that narrative, too, where it's like, I mean, look at these guys. These guys are wearing wires trying to set me up. I mean, the game is rigged.
These
so
are the,
I don't know.
But they're the people that Trump picked.
Right.
It's not the deep state. That's his staff.
Yeah, yeah, no, exactly. Those but I mean, people. But those are, but that's the, if you are a Fox News acolyte and yeah. that's all you're consuming, then that helps your confirmation bias just that much more.
Right. But that, there was talk that they might be declassifying just like everything, right? And
right. A ton of documents we're talking about on last week. Yeah, that would have exposed intel gathering methods or sources.
And now Trump is backing away from that?
Yeah, because a bunch of allies were like, hey, motherfucker, that's like, there's shit in there that we also need. Like, this wouldn't just affect the U.S. This yeah. affects Oof. Many intelligence communities. And just this is reckless.
But
so,
that was, I guess, a previous possible attempt to blow this up. So that was another indicator that we had last week
right.
that maybe he's just trying to do drastic things.
And would have been desperate because, like we were saying, it was reeking of the memo gate thing when it was the memo was supposed to absolve him of all guilt and show that Carter Page actually wasn't a Russian asset. Spoiler alert, they've been watching him for years.
Right.
But like, yeah, I think, right, like we're saying, he's just thrashing now.
Yeah. And Caleb, you bring up a good point that I feel like conservatives never want to acknowledge when they're putting together all these vast conspiracies is these are all people hired by Trump who are conservatives themselves.
Yeah.
Like,
who agree with what he wants to do.
Yeah.
Who campaigned with him. And like Jeff Sessions is not the swamp. That's his.
Yeah. That's him at the very least having some modicum of respect
but
for
then,
the law.
You know, not everybody's following it like us. And I'm sure there's people who are like, man, fuck Jeff Sessions. And it's like they don't know that, like, you don't know how it works. They don't know that he gave him that job.
Right.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And I think it all depends on whatever narrative at that time is going to help obscure the president's guilt. And they're trying basically in everything but the kitchen sink attack here.
Yeah. And I think Trump's one true genius gift is knowing how to, like, basically be like a middle school mean girl, like just a messy bitch who like knows how to get drama going around
mm-hmm.
them just nonstop. And so, and then he knows how to play that in the media. Like that's what he's good at. So he knows how to just create headlines that are going to at least play to his base and make his base, you know, think
right.
what he wants them to think. So there's a new book by Kathleen Jameson Hall that is profiled by Jay Mayer in a new New Yorker article where she basically says that Kathleen Jameson Hall is a Penn professor who basically has devoted her whole life to following and studying elections. And her main specialty prior to this past election was focusing on how the debates swung elections in various directions. And she's never had a political bias. She's, you know, just 100% everyone. Jay Mayer gets quotes from all of her colleagues and they're like, she's just such a hard ass and so all
yeah.
about the numbers that you
right.
can't fuck around
right.
with
like,
her.
She honestly has no personality.
Right?
Yeah,
you just
right.
like, you can't say anything as a joke because she's just going to be like, no, that's not true. She's
yeah,
just
yeah,
like
yeah.
a,
oh, right.
a machine
right. Got you.
Of truth. And so the article starts out by pointing out that both sides have either said they don't think Russia swung it, or we laugh at the idea that they did. We don't, but I think people on the right are like, oh, it was Putin, right? Or at least discounting the idea that it's knowable in any way that Russian
interference.
Right, how could we ever know what changed things? And so this academic has spent the last year like looking into the numbers, the very specific details of what Russia did, and she makes the point that yes, you can actually say, like, based on a preponderance of evidence. Obviously, we don't have, you know, in a situation like this, you can't go and look at someone's brain and say, well, this is clear. But based
on, like, the GRU in Russia, it's like, so is this what you were thinking with this troll attack?
Yeah, exactly. But the effect was that they had access to all this different information. They had Hillary Clinton's strategic like roadmap basically, and they went about suppressing different like points that they were scared of. This is the Russians and the Trump administration. Like, one of their biggest weak points was that voters in three battleground states, Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, that she ended up losing. There was an unusually high proportion of residents whose demographic and voting profiles identified them as likely Democrats, but Hillary defectors, people who were so unhappy with her that they were considering voting for a third party candidate. And so the Clinton campaign had identified those people, and the Russians stole that information, and it was available to everyone, including the Trump campaign. And the Trump campaign and the Russians specifically went after those people.
And just made sure they stayed home.
Yeah, and tried to either get them to stay home or vote for a third-party candidate.
Wait, so and this information about those voters in Michigan, Wisconsin, and Pennsylvania, that was information that they know was stolen from the Clinton campaign?
Yes, they do know that. And that was that came out when Mueller announced the indictment of all those Russians back in July.
Right.
That was specifically named in that.
Holy shit.
Information that they had access to. But that's just one aspect of her argument, but I found that particularly convincing.
Yeah.
And most of her argument is just, you know, pointing out how every election in the modern era has gone up to this point is the elections have similar resources, similar roadmaps, and similar weaknesses, and they cancel each other out for the most part. And in this case, you just had this extra actor who was pushing on the side of the Trump campaign, and things were definitely more even than I think people realized heading into the election. Everyone was like, oh, Trump has no chance, and it turns out he did. But with the help of Russia and with Russia, you know, with those leaked emails, for instance, like one of the questions she asks is, like, imagine if it were even and Russia had leaked both the Clinton cache of emails and the equivalent on the Trump side, what would that have looked like? And that would have exposed, like, the Stormy Daniels stuff. It would have exposed, like,
Trump Tower meeting,
right. Like, all sorts of crazy shit that would have had a huge impact on an election that ended up coming down to a few hundred thousand votes. So it is a really compelling argument. We'll link off to the article about the book.
What was the other thing you were saying about James Comey, like right after he came out and said, okay, we looked into Hillary and there's nothing, but also kind of...
Right. So there was that press conference where Comey came out and he basically said...
Right before the election, right?
Yeah.
It was
in October?
It was the earlier one. The press conference that happened over the summer.
Okay,
where Comey said, we're not going to pursue this investigation any further, but, and then went just in on the on Clinton and like how careless her actions were and just like really said a lot of negative shit about her. And that was shown to be pretty impactful. Like both Comey press conferences or Comey announcements that were sort of unprecedented. Nobody expected like the head of the FBI to behave in that way, were impactful on, you know, how many people voted, who they voted for. You know, Nate Silver specifically does say that that last Comey email, you can like look at the numbers and see that that basically swung the election. But this makes the argument that James Comey was acting on the basis of a forged Russian document. Basically, Russian hackers created this document where it seemed like Clinton was colluding with Loretta Lynch. And like Loretta Lynch was like, I'm going to go easy on you, Hill. And like they had this back and forth. And it was actually a like forgery, a shitty Russian forgery. But that made Comey worried that once it came out that he had stopped this election,
that this other evidence
that this other evidence would come out and it would look like the Clinton campaign was in cahoots with the Department of Justice. So he like went extra hard to make it
to
seem
like offset that.
Yeah.
Wait, how does the author know that James Comey even interacted with this forged document?
I forget exactly what that line of reasoning is, but it seemed.
Oh, okay. I think it's saying because they were also targeting the FBI to try and give them as much misinformation as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Well, look, we're here, baby. 2018.
Yeah. It's just interesting because, I mean.
Have you started canvassing yet?
No, I'm about to because I was just reading an article about the VAN, the Voter Activation Network,
yeah.
Which is what has most of like any voter outreach you do.
Yeah.
That their mobile app is what, you know, canvassers now, back in the day used to be clipboard yep. and just striking numbers off the list. They have an app, right? The increase in mobile users of that has increased 230% since the last midterms.
Oh, wow.
So I was reading that as like a dimension of voter enthusiasm. I mean, most likely I'll probably phone bank into districts more swing districts because I'm like locally, I'm not too concerned.
I've been really active because this year I was like, I have to like do something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I've been doing a bunch of canvassing and voter registration and there's like five swing districts within an hour of LA. So you have a lot to choose from. But I've actually been really surprised the number of Republican doors I've knocked on that in which they've answered. And we've had like oddly very thoughtful like conversations about how concerned they are. Which
right.
I don't know if that's how it bears out in statistics nationwide, but like I haven't spoken to a Republican in California yet that isn't like at the very least put off, if not terrified by Trump.
Right,
which is encouraging to hear. You want people on that side because they're still getting what they want. They get justices that will ban abortion. They get tax breaks during economic booms. Like they're getting what they want, and so to hear them still say this guy is terrifying to me is, I think, super important.
Yeah. Well, I think California probably has a different brand of Republican. I'm sure if you went knocking on doors and like. You know, Mississippi or Alabama and like those Republicans. But yeah, I think it's true. There's clearly a group of concerned Republicans who are like, this is like other game.
Absolutely. But don't forget, you don't have to win over everyone to win the White House and House and
just bring the reasonable people into the light.
Exactly. Right.
And I think it's an important point that actually going face to face with people, they're forced to encounter your position as that of an actual human being with like a soul.
Yeah, you know? Exactly. Like a Twitter avatar.
Right.
And also liberals are the worst about voting of every demographic.
Right.
Like you don't have to send volunteers, college students into farm country to remind farmers to vote. They just do it.
Right.
Right.
But you have to go into cities and suburbs and hammer Democrats to vote.
Right.
Yeah.
Time Convince. And time again. Otherwise, you literally won't win.
Yeah.
I did a fundraiser show for this candidate running in the Midwest, and they said, they were like, you know, the way to win my district is to either swing Republican women in the suburbs or to get the city in my district to vote.
Just to turn up, yeah.
And she's like, I'm not holding my breath on the city. I'm focused on the suburbs, the women in the suburbs.
Hey, all you urban youths, voting is lit, right? We got it. All
right. Thanks, Dad.
So that's been solved. We're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets. If you don't win your first bet, that's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. The President of the United States was at the UN speaking to the UN General Assembly and just kind of blabbed on about all kinds of stuff that he likes to talk about, like North Korea, oil prices, his solution to the migrant crisis. And I think he literally suggested that the other people on the UN General Assembly make their countries great again.
Yeah.
And
he's basically like, why do they want to leave? Make it so they don't want to leave anyway.
Right.
And then you'll solve the crisis.
Right.
Because it's just that easy.
Yeah.
But yeah, that was a odd, odd couple of moments, that whole speech. And he got laughed at pretty quickly.
Yeah. Yeah. I think within a minute or two, people were just laughing at him.
Well, I think they laughed because he said, we've done the best work of any, of basically any administration in history.
Right.
And it's like, he's literally like a fucking Willy Wonka character.
Yeah, no.
He talks like, what's that character's name? Like Prudius or like the little fat guy?
Adolphus?
Adolphus,
is that his name?
Yeah.
Adolphus?
That's Trump. Just like being like, look at me, we did it.
Like, just like chocolate all over his face.
Yes.
Like, dude, get the fuck out of here.
Laughing at him. Laughing.
We have a clip of it just so you can kind of, it's funny. Have you seen the clip?
Like, yeah.
There's a moment when right after he says it,
he's
processing. He's like,
yes.
Oh, they hate me.
Right.
But anyway, here, let's listen to the whole clip.
My administration has accomplished more than almost any administration in the history of our country. America's so true.
So true.
Didn't expect that reaction, but that's okay.
That's amazing.
It's kind of, it was the one time I was kind of like, oh, he showed a human side for a second, where I thought normally he would just be like, yep, and that's what I said.
Right.
Applause break. Now moving on. But you could tell he was even like, all right, yeah, it kind of took an L on that one.
Wow. That didn't go well.
Oh, so you guys read the news, huh? You guys read newspapers? Didn't realize this was an informed audience.
There's also that part of his personality where, like, he loves to talk a big game on Twitter and when people aren't around, but, like, he doesn't like to fire people. He doesn't like to be disliked by people.
Right.
So if he's faced with people, you know, laughing in his face, which is, by the way, his biggest nightmare. That's, like, textbook, narcissistic,
right,
like personality disorder.
That is your nightmare.
Is your nightmare is people laughing at you. And then if you go through his speeches and just him talking in general, it's like, they're all laughing at us. Don't let them laugh at us. Mexico is laughing at us.
Oh, right. And then I think 4 years ago he tweeted, he's like, the president is a laughing stock.
Laughing
and he's
right.
like, wow, you foresaw your own future.
He said this country is, people are laughing at our country.
Right.
It's like, nah, dude, they're laughing at you.
Yeah, right. Now it's him.
Yeah.
It was, just that moment, though. I could kind of tell, like I said, he's in his bubble, and he really thought he could say some shit like that, and people would just be like,
you have done it.
Talk that shit, Donald.
Because like, he's not at a backyard rally or like, but he's actually in front of people, and you hear, he's literally so dumb that he has to fill the dead air by going, so true.
so true. While they laugh.
So true. Right.
Okay, that didn't go.
It's like the most, his brain can't even come up with anything more, slightly more sophisticated than so true.
I wonder
if
Stephen Miller wrote that, and then backstage he goes, you burned me, Miller.
Yeah, right.
I look like a goddamn fool out there.
Right. I was trying to think of the speechwriter writing that and thinking it was like a defiant statement.
Yes.
And then Trump gets it out there and is just like, yeah, everybody's going to agree with this. This is just a known fact.
It's like
that
you're
we're
at the United Nations. You're not at a rally. You're at the United
right.
Nations.
Right.
And you're shitting on the term globalism in front of the United Nations.
Right.
You think people are going to take you seriously when you say, we've done better than any... Yeah. This is almost any administration. Then who are you referencing as who's done better than you?
George Washington.
George Washington, like such an idiot,
right.
Such a blithering idiot.
All right.
Well, I know. No, the other part too was like when President Rouhani of Iran was also just taking shots when he went up there, and he's like, "Oh, this guy's basically talking some Nazi shit now," and he's like, "I don't need to talk to him." He's like, "If he wants to negotiate, he's like." All his other friends, China, like France, like they still want to fuck with us because the other countries that are still in the Iran deal, like, no, it's working, and we're not going to let like old President Porcini penis fuck the whole thing up. So Triple P,
Porcini cock.
Yeah, they're holding steady, and it's sort of like one of these moments where he's like, Rouhani was like, well, and all your friends like me, so what are you gonna do?
Just all his worst nightmares.
Yeah, I got laughed at.
All right, guys, let's talk about the shit show we just watched, Kavanaugh D-Day, as we have it labeled on our document for the day. I don't know. First impressions, what are you guys' thoughts?
Well, I guess for people, let's just give you a recap if somehow you've been living under a fucking rock. So today was the day that Brett Kavanaugh and Christine Blasey Ford were both going to give testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee. Where they would talk about her allegations or not. And, like we talked about yesterday's episode, the GOP so bravely chose a woman prosecutor to cross-examine Dr. Ford so they would avoid really having any clips of them that are usable in an attack ad, really, is what that was. Because there are no optics of them being like, hey, what did you think? Chuck Grassley, I'm sorry, off top. Yo, my man, we have to have term limits. Like, this guy is even Pat, there's a lot of older people in the Senate where
a lot
you're like,
of husks.
Yeah, right.
man
husks that are just withering in the wind. And you're like, we have moved on and you've stayed fixed.
Like cartoon versions of old men.
Yeah.
They're like the exaggerated cartoon version.
I could have swore Chuck Grassley came off like a dude arguing whether or not he's allowed to take his leftovers from an all-you-can-eat buffet.
Right.
He was like, I paid for this your Salisbury steak, so I should be able to take it home and this bread.
Right.
Like, it was every now and then he would interject with that.
And he could not, despite the fact that they had it set up so that he would not, interact in any negative way with women. He could not stop interrupting women. It was just nonstop.
Yeah. There was a lot of, this is not a shock. And if anyone is shocked at people interrupting women in any space at any point, at this point, it's like, fucking grow up. There's no more. I was thinking about this today of like, very rarely, like, people are not really expressing that much surprise at this happening now. Now it's just happening.
Right.
And you make of it what you do. Something that bothered me about the coverage of this story that we were all watching it, the CNN live feed.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it's like the 24 news hour cycle is treated like fucking ESPN a lot of the time.
Yeah.
But that felt like especially on display today, where there was one point towards the end of the hearing where they like took a 5-minute break and then they cut to like a fucking ESPN table full of commentators who were all talk like you could have literally switched out Kavanaugh and Ford or even like men and women with any two sports teams and it was indistinguishable and it was just it's so weird and conflicting where it's like it's this incredibly important moment but it's also being treated and at some points played for by people I fundamentally agree with as entertainment and you know like the even in you know the big theatrical court you know people save their headliners for last and you know you see Ted Cruz comes out at the very end and Booker comes out at the very end and just the whole fucking production of it and that was something about Christine Blasey Ford's testimony that I found very compelling is that I mean aside from all the brave horrendous shit she has to relive again for this fucking national stage, just acknowledging that, like, yeah, no one wants to do this. And to an extent, she's being asked to perform for better or worse for everybody and drudge up all this fucking trauma for everybody that she says at the beginning, like, I don't want to do this. I don't want to be here. And for and like, you know, she doesn't want to perform for people because to some extent, every person in that fucking room is performing something. And some of them are performing something I agree with, some of them aren't, but all of them are performing.
Lindsey Graham got his performance.
Oh my God.
Everyone was grandstanding.
She was incredibly compelling and very, very human. It was like an island of humanity in the middle of all this grandstanding and, you know, all right, it's time for the main event. Like everybody was just really treating it like, you know, and then they would get the, you know, faux solemnity and be like, this is a very serious issue. But like it was definitely treated like the fucking Super Bowl of
politics. Yeah. And even like the brevity, like pundits offer, like suddenly like they have a moment to laugh. It's still kind of shitty when you're really looking at what this situation is. And I feel like even I remember as I watch it and like trying to sort of to deflect my own discomfort and like embarrassment as a man in a society where this is how women are treated, or just sort of being like, yeah, like this is fucking shitty. I feel I, like watching it, I just like this seems like the worst way to actually mediate something like this. But again, it was clearly like this partisan dogfight thing where everyone had their combatant in there and whatever the collateral damage to these people didn't matter because they like they're playing another game too outside of this, which is for the Republicans, win the culture war, stack the Supreme Court, and the Democrats is just like, let's just try and block as much of this shit we can. And like, I guess these two people happen to be the conduits for that to all go down in. But yeah, it was one of those things too. Like even as you talk about the commentary, people would go in, they're like, her performance was riveting. Her performance
was used a lot.
Yeah. His performance, yeah.
And there was like one soundbite that was like, well, as we know historically, the women always lose. And I'm like, you could just put in a fucking football team name there.
Right,
like,
right.
What are you?
Wait, who said that?
Someone on fucking CNN said that.
The
like,
women always lose?
The women, like, always not lose. Like the Rams or the Bears. Like, it's just fucking ridiculous the way these stories are covered. I mean, that's not the huge point here, but it was something that stuck out to me, especially on viewing this today. And even like, you know, like us and the whole world gathered around it like it's a sports game. It's to a degree, it's like it's so important and we all need to be watching, but it's also disturbing the way that we all consume it and the I don't know.
Yeah. Well, it's like a cultural Super Bowl Sunday where everyone was like new. People were like taking time out of the day to watch it because it's a very important moment. What Dr. Ford did is very important. Mm-hmm. But you think too, like it also, we were reading stories about people who Nick was telling us about, like, you know, women who were watching and brought to tears hearing her testimony. But they were Trump supporters, and after they kind of wiped their tears and were like, yeah, but you know what? I still don't I think Kavanaugh should still be confirmed. Like, it was people were still compartmentalizing what was going on to service this like culture war, this zero sum game where they're either the Democrats win or the Republicans win, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's all they're only looking at it through that prism.
That's a lot of the unfortunate part about it is no matter what happened today, people's minds were made up going into it. And unfortunately, I think we've all grown so cynical to know that, like, it's probably not going to change anything.
Yeah.
I hope it does, but I think if we were all to place bets right now, I would assume his confirmation is going to go through, unfortunately.
I wrote last night just as I was like thinking about what was coming up, and also we were coming off of that Trump press conference where he just like did Trump jazz, like, but like really unhinged and didn't really seem to be coherent for 2 hours. I was like thinking about how people responded, and you clearly saw like everybody who I know was like, what the fuck, this guy is clearly unhinged and a lunatic. But the other side was like, this is why we elected him. And I really do think that we're at this point now where it's not just that like people are, I think we tend to think that the other side sees what we see and they're just like willfully ignoring it or like bluffing and just pretending like something else happened. But I honestly think they legit like see something different. Their brain is absorbing different information.
Well, it is a double-edged sword though, because like a lot of the post conference commentary was talking about how if their performances, for lack of a better word, were flipped and he was really composed and polite and she would have come out belligerent and argumentative and combative, people would have been talking about how horrible it was that she was that way, while a lot of people were also saying the Republicans were relieved at the fact that he came out guns blazing and took a really strong stance. And so it's like exactly what they're saying they liked about the way he approaches exactly what she would have been blamed for had she had taken on that kind of tone.
Oh yeah, it's like Brett Kavanaugh is like too emotional to be elected to the
Supreme
Court.
Look at this hysterical man.
But no one would ever say that.
And that's the other takeaway is I think he's guilty, but regardless of whether he's found guilty or innocent of this, I think the lack of composure he showed at this press conference is an entirely different, less important discussion on why he might not be fit for the Supreme Court.
Yeah. Well, and also there, I forget which Democratic senator brought this up, but there was, it might have been, I don't want to get it wrong, but there was one person who brought it to his attention, you know, with that, like, you know, applying it to his own job of like, if you were looking at this situation objectively, and you think what's happening is okay, you're a bad judge.
Yeah, like you want the best evidence, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was Richard Blumenthal. Yeah.
Yes, it was Blumenthal. And it was like, that was one of the more cogent points I thought made in this entire thing, to him at least, of like, you know, you can deny all you want, but like, you're not even doing good at the job you're supposed to be elected to.
That moment, and when Durbin was calling him out about like basically saying just open yourself up to the FBI investigation, you're saying you're willing to clear your good name,
right,
and take any necessary measures to do that, will you let on the FBI investigation? That's when he was like as clumsily stumbling over his words and evading questions more at that point than any other point in the
conference. It seems like the two, like each the Democrats and the Republicans had their strategy, and for the Republicans it was just hammer this point in that Dianne Feinstein sat on this allegation till the 0 hour, and then suddenly sprung it on us
at the victim's request.
Yeah, at the 0 hour. That's not fair. Like, what's that about? That's irrelevant. And like
they
started
the day out like giving her timeline from her perspective, from Blasey Ford's perspective, and it was, you know, she didn't want to come forward. She knew it was going to ruin her life, but she eventually did because, you know, she felt like it was her civic duty. Miley Cyrus's little sister is apparently something that I know exists now.
Yeah.
So she was dating, who's that dude who has teeth like he still sucks his thumb?
Lil Xan?
Lil Xan.
Yeah.
So she was dating him.
Diego.
And still dating him, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know. I don't even care anymore.
Broke up. According to super producer Anna Hosnier.
Lil Xan, let me just search. Lil Xan, Noah Cyrus.
Oh, Lil Xan.
Noah.
You got
so this is the deal. She's got like a whole merch thing she was doing with like pizza slime, I guess. And there's like sweats that say like, I'm like crying or sad or whatever. And she bottled her tears up. It's a result of her breakup with Lil Xan.
Oh.
And it was so bad that she bottled her tears. The wild thing is, so when you look on the website, they're selling for a vial of tears, and I'll tell you the amount in a second. It says, this is approximately 12 tears made by Noah Cyrus as a result of sadness. Human digestion of these tears is not suggested because tears are generally pretty salty, and that would just be super fucking weird if you drank someone else's tears.
It would be.
You know what the cost is? $12,000.
Wait.
For a vial of this person's fucking tears.
$12,000 per vial? Are people buying?
I think there's only one vial, maybe.
Oh, okay, got it. Well, then, in that case, I mean,
but if there are 12 tiers, that means $1,000 for these teardrop tiers?
Yeah, $1,000 per tier.
I mean, I don't even know. I mean, I it's a cool PR move. Look, I mean, we're talking about you now.
Yeah, yeah.
Right.
And I didn't know who the fuck you were at all. And I'm still, she does very much look like Miley Cyrus. I thought it was
someone's going to do it. That's expensive, but I mean, there's someone out there who's like.
Well, yeah, it's like a flash sale where it's only available for like 48 hours. Yeah, it's something absurd. But yeah, you can get it, and it's in an eyedropper. So you can, maybe you could,
I don't think you're that sad if you're bottling your tear. Like if you're actually, you know, out of control crying, you're not going to be thinking about selling your tears.
Unless you're so,
it's a very calculating,
like, prone to crying. You're like, get my eye funnel.
Yeah.
Like, how do you even collect the tears?
I mean,
is it one of those like dental suction
tubes?
Are
we going with that? Is this actually the tears?
Let's for a moment.
Not just some water?
Let's for a moment feel like I'm getting my $12,000.
Well, it said don't taste these because you're going to taste them and go, this is fucking water.
Yeah.
This isn't tear.
This is LaCroix.
Yeah.
You fuck. Yeah, but how would you? I don't understand. Like, do you cry over a plate or something? I don't know. If anyone knows how to like bottle your tears,
you let your eyes well up, then you get a dropper
and just suck them
and
up.
You suck them up. That's how I would bottle my tears.
Okay. Would you give a video of you bottling it? Because that's how I need
I'm going to sell my tears. When this podcast drops, I'm going to sell.
I'm sure someone will buy it, but it has to be a reasonable price, like maybe like $1,400.
$1,400, yeah. Right. Discount tears. You don't want to get those Cyrus Lulzan tears.
Yeah, know where your tears are coming from, y'all.
So Pizza Slime is a store. You said that, like, I should know what Pizza Slime
is.
Yeah,
I always see, like, they're big. I always see them on Instagram, like, just doing a bunch of pizza stuff. Like, they have a mug that just says Drake tears. It's like, you know.
Yeah, they have a t-shirt that's, sorry, I'm trash.
Hell yeah.
Hell yeah, dude.
I think that's part of the Noah Cyrus line. That says, but not even sorry, S-R-Y.
Yeah, S-R-Y, I am.
Super Millennial Gen trash. Z shorthand.
All right, we're going to take another quick break. We'll be right back.
You like to watch new stuff, right, Zygang? I know I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new. Because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump. Join Lisa and her hand-selected staff at Chateau Rosabelle, a glamorous estate in the French countryside, as they live, work, and play together 24/7. Vanderpump Villa is where first-class luxury meets world-class drama. And don't miss the new season of The Kardashians, starring The Kardashians, of course. And season 5 promises new horizons for the entire Kardashian clan. And if you're looking for steamy streams, check out Grand Cayman Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set on the tropical Caribbean island of Grand Cayman, where the rich come to play. But be warned, it's a small island. And secrets don't stay secret for long. So come check out what's new on Hulu this month. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Signing up and playing is so easy. Simply sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you can get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matter more than ever. Place your moneyline, prop, and parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. That's right, up to $1,500. Again, sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park. That's 1-800-GAMBLER.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Me.
Focus.
Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
And we're back. In keeping with our look forward at the movie A Star Is Born, we're tremendously excited here at the Daily Zeitgeist office.
I think the trailer has given us just the greatest joy from the moment Lady Gaga sings that one note. That's the most,
I get
for
chills
me personally,
every time.
I'm like, yo, I just want to see that part. And also, but now that there's more information coming out, I'm like, now I'm more interested. Because I know at one point he's like, his voice is supposed to be kind of like Sam Elliott. And then now we find out that his vibe is based or inspired by Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam. And there's like this new interview that came out where Bradley Cooper told Yahoo, he was like, you know, him and Eddie Vedder became really good friends, and Vedder really helped him to like develop his character of this, like, you know, this Jackson Maine character and all the nuances of being a rock star. But he said one thing that was really interesting, that when he told Vedder, he's like, I want to redo A Star Is Born, that this is the quote. He says, yeah, Eddie thought it was crazy that I was going to do this movie. And he was like, what? Bro, don't do that. And he said that inspired him. He's like, well, wow. Fuck you, Eddie Vedder. I'm going to do this shit.
That's a direct quote. Yeah. Eddie Vedder was like, bro.
What, bro?
Bradley Cooper just has that, I'm feeling myself. So I'm just going over and over
in
his
head. Wait, can Bradley Cooper actually sing? Do we even know?
Yeah,
I think so. Yeah,
sounds
I
good.
Think that's him on the thing. Yeah.
Yeah. People say
I think,
good.
Talk about overrated. I think he's hella overrated.
Oh.
He's everywhere.
He's everywhere, and he's on like the top sexiest man list. And I'm like, that guy?
Yeah.
Well, because he's got he has the sort of traditionally acceptable, unoffensive, attractive male face, you know, like a Ken doll.
I don't even think that. I don't think he's like objectively handsome. I'm just like,
who are you putting on that list then? Swap somebody out.
Michael Fassbender.
Oh. Oh, shit.
Yeah.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Ooh,
Stumbunfuhrer.
Yum.
Stumbunfuhrer, yeah.
Oh, but he's so delightful.
The story about how Bradley Cooper directed this movie, because it was the first time Clint directed a movie, was 48, I think, is how old he is. And then
Clint Eastwood?
Yeah. He was like, yeah, well, Clint told me the first time he directed the movie. God.
Yeah, so, Clint he also talked to a fucking empty chair and on stage to a bunch of people at the RNC.
And
so
then
I wouldn't...
Then there's the story about Lady Gaga's audition, where she walked into the room and Bradley Cooper was there, and he just handed her a makeup wipe.
What?
And then she wiped off her face, and then he said, there you are.
Oh, God. See, none of this is
Be
making
cool.
me like...
I know. When you say that out loud, I'm like...
None of this is making me like Bradley Cooper anymore.
Right.
This guy
Be
sounds
coops.
Like the biggest pretentious douche.
There you are.
Lady Gaga.
But just like, it's on some next level, like feeling himself shit that like, I feel like I just want to see this movie just to, I don't know. I'm excited.
That his sense of self is so inflated.
Yeah.
It could be funny. Well, I mean, the critics seem to like it a lot, so we'll see. But it would be funny, you go and you're like, this is a mess.
Right.
Like, no one told him to pump the brakes on this shit.
Right. Yeah. Just fully commit.
There you are, Miss Germanata. Or whatever her real name is.
Hey, I just wanted to see you again.
Hey, what? I just wanted to look at you again.
Yeah.
I wanted to see you, but that mascara was getting in the way.
Right.
What? Calm down.
There's some good memes with the, hey, and then she turns around.
Yeah, there's a lot of panel memes, and then there was one video that I saw with people just muting the clip and going over and over and just muting it and putting their own words in Bradley Cooper's like, hey, what? You gonna Venmo me for this ride?
That's a good one.
Well,
hey, want to get some Thai?
Yeah, exactly.
There's a great Thai place down the block.
Hey, you think it's unhealthy I live in this car?
Speaking of our parents, baby boomers are now just as likely to smoke weed as teens.
Of course they are.
I think they always were, and now they're just telling the truth in those surveys.
Right, as the stigma is lessens over time. Yeah, it's odd because, they're showing that 50 and 60-somethings just as likely as 12 to 17-year-olds.
12 to 17?
Yeah.
Ooh.
I mean, those are prime weed-smoking years. I don't know, at least in California. No, I wasn't smoking weed at 12.
What are you taking the edge off of at 12, really?
Right.
Puberty. You know what I mean? I wasn't really taking the first time I smoked weed, it wasn't take the edge off shit. It was more like, what's a new brain thing I can do? Okay, like, what's a new experience?
Yeah, I got fucked up and not really fucked up, but purely out of boredom. It was just like, I just hyperventilated a little bit and now I feel different.
Here, let me hold my neck weird.
I actually kind of want to talk to a high 12-year-old and see, like what are their thoughts?
Very boring.
Oh, I'm sure you could freak the shit out of a high 12-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
You're like, let me tell you the truth, young man. And they're like, what? all kinds of weird shit in their head.
It's interesting. If you go to drugabuse.com, they have all these charts of just like the average age and percentage of drug use between the different generations. They break it out between millennials, Gen X, baby boomers, and then the greatest generation. And we're all kind of clustered together with alcohol. Like everybody, it goes up to 80 around your 21st birthday, 80% of people use it. But marijuana, cocaine, heroin, stimulants, sedatives, tranquilizers, hallucinogens, and psychotherapeutics, baby boomers are all like orders of magnitude higher than anybody else. It's just like that time was,
I mean, I'm sure
it's a wild time.
If you map wealth on that same curve too.
Right.
Probably the same thing, because you ain't fucking 16 and have cocaine money.
Right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. You're a fucking 60-year-old wheeler dealer business person. Or a young person in Hollywood.
I mean, why don't... That's an issue I want to hear. Why is cocaine so overpriced? I think it is clearly, like, the most expensive one, isn't it?
It's pretty expensive.
Of all the drugs?
Yeah, maybe, like literally kilogram for kilogram, for sure.
Let's get those prices down.
And, like, per... like,
come on now. Come on, Ecuador. Come on, Bolivia. Cut us a...
I feel like it's just, like, strong...
A deal on some
tariffs?
it's just a total black market. The drug trade is violent. You also need massive amounts of coca leaves to even produce just a little bit of base for cocaine. And then you gotta step on it, you know what I mean?
Was it cheaper, like, in the 1800s when it was legal? Like,
I think anything, like, well, it as it becomes
prescribed,
yeah, like yeah. as something becomes prohibited and prohibition happens, then it turns into the black market where things have crazy value because it's illegal and there's more risk involved.
Yeah.
But I think it's probably better that, you know, cocaine is not just rampantly available anymore.
I mean, the market determines how much something costs, and people who like cocaine apparently really like it. It's got like a very strong niche market.
I'm surprised.
I've heard people get good reviews.
Yeah. I'm sure a lot of podcasts are started off cocaine benders.
Oh, yeah.
Like, dude, you know we could fucking do a fucking show, dude, where we're just fucking... Jack, you fucking know facts and shit, and I fucking worked in politics, dude. And, like, we can fucking say shit, and people will fucking, like, listen, dog.
Cocaine in particular, so the highest it goes up, like, millennials peak at, like, age 20, where about, like, 6-7% of them are using cocaine. Baby boomers peaked at around the same age at, like, 23%. Like, 23% of them were using cocaine. That's...
Yeah, the 80s, because they were coming to, you know, the 80s were...
No, I think it was the 70s.
Oh, shit.
60s and 70s.
Well, at least that was my favorite.
I wonder if cocaine is different now, like, because weed is better now, and it's, like, more strong. I wonder if cocaine the same as it was in the 70s, or is it...
I think basically.
Probably. I mean, maybe they've been able to get more purity, but I'd imagine it's around the same levels. Because they always talk about the purity of cocaine, how it's gone down over time. But I don't know. That's just something my friends talk about.
And the medical industrial complex is not studying and like strengthening cocaine, whereas weed is cancer medicine.
Yeah,
like,
they're doing a lot of research in that.
Yes.
It's what's funny though too, in the same study about it, they said the oldest age group though also saw a steep increase. So people 65 and older are now using they're more monthly users of marijuana in that age bracket. And I think as people realize that there are actual uses for it medicinally, that like an older person with any kind of ailment might be like, you should try this for your pain, maybe.
Yeah. Well, it's probably should be a clue that no one is lobbying for medical cocaine. Like, it's only one drug that people are like, it could be medical.
Right, yeah.
There's nothing else that really has a...
Yeah, and it's funny, too, because when the conversations around legalization are always like, what about the effects on the youth?
Right.
You know, it's like, what about the kids or whatever? And, like, that seems pretty steady where it's like, what about the elders?
Right.
Yeah.
These are the ones who are... You know, like as this article in the Washington Post says, talk to your grandparents about marijuana before somebody else does.
Yeah. Did you know Freud? I think people know that he did cocaine, but it really did fuel the invention of psychotherapy and like the whole idea of like a talk therapy, which is just like so perfect. It's if you've ever been around people on cocaine, they're just nonstop love talking about themselves. And he was heavily using cocaine, like prescribing it to himself because he thought it helped with his social anxiety, but was heavily using cocaine when he invented like, now I feel much better after I've talked for like 8 hours in a row to somebody. So like, it really is just cocaine invented that. Cocaine is the reason that Coca-Cola is so popular because, you know, there were like 1,000 different sodas during that time period. And
did Pepsi ever have Coke in it?
No. Pepsi only came around in the 60s, 70s. Coca-Cola lost all of its cocaine in the early 20th century.
Damn. But if you got that, then, if you got that pre-band cola, let me know.
Yeah.
And yeah, thanks to cocaine, we have the XFL. You know, there's many things that have come out of it. So it's not just those things.
Just the World Wrestling
My favorite is that Eddie Griffin's joke about Alexander Graham Bell used cocaine. He's like, of course he did. And he's like, that's the most coked up idea I've ever heard. Where he's like, hey, I wish I could talk to somebody that ain't even here.
Like, just pick this up and I'm talking to him.
Yeah. You know? Right.
Oh, what a great. All right, that's going to do it for this week's Weekly Zeitgeist. Please like and review the show if you like the show. Means the world to Miles. He needs your validation, folks. I hope you're having a great weekend, and I will talk to you Monday. Bye.
Zeit Gang, you like to watch new stuff, right? I mean, who doesn't? I do. Well, go to Hulu and see what's new, because Hulu has new stuff all the time, like Vanderpump Villa, the new docudrama starring Lisa Vanderpump, where first-class luxury meets world-class drama, a new season of The Kardashians starring The Kardashians, of course, and Grand Cayman, Secrets in Paradise, the sizzling new reality show set in the tropical Caribbean. It's streaming now, and it's waiting for you on Hulu.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Top Thrill 2 is like no other course. Two 420-foot vertical speedways, three launches.
All right. Let's talk strategy.
Copy that, driver. Go for maximum acceleration off the start.
Measure that.
You've got a short straightaway to push from 0 to 74 on the first vertical speedway.
And what about the rollback?
Rollback will set you up for an explosive reverse climb 420 feet in the sky so you reach 0 G's in total weightlessness.
420 feet of straight-up speed. Let's get it.
Top Thrill 2, the world's tallest and fastest triple-launch strata coaster. Get your tickets at CedarPoint.com.